and the fire of passion in her eyes was an open invitation. Suddenly, Drake felt his willpower being tested to the full. Before he knew what he was doing, he was on his feet and being led to the spare bedroom. It was as if his desires and love were carrying him along rather than his legs. It was only when they reached the bedroom door that he somehow managed to stop.
I think we should wait.
Even after the words were out, he still wasn't sure if they had actually passed his lips or if they were mere thoughts in his head. Turning to face him, she draped her arms over his shoulders.
Wait. I have waited. I've waited 9 years for this.
I know. So have I.
His will was crumbling. The scent of her perfume and the intimate closeness of her lips were almost overwhelming.
Then why must we wait any longer?
She moved in even closer, brushing those tantalizing lips lightly over his ear and cheek.
All I know is that tomorrow could be our last day. Who can tell what will happen once we meet with Exodus?
He took a step back.
You know that I love you, Lenora. I always will. But I just can't do this. I'm so sorry.
He fully expected to see a look of hurt and rejection appear on her face, even anger. But instead, astonishingly, all he saw was gentle understanding. She touched his cheek.
It's all right.
It's not that I don't want to,
he added quickly and rather awkwardly.
It's just...
He wanted to explain. He yearned to tell her that he simply couldn't bear the pain of losing her once this was over. If this happened between them now, how could he ever let her go? He knew what she would say to reassure him, and if he heard those words, he would surely give in. She kissed him lightly on the lips.
Don't think about it. It's my fault.
She cast an eye over their surroundings and let out a soft laugh.
Besides, this isn't exactly how I pictured our first night together after so long, anyway.
Drake smiled back.
Me either.
With a sigh, she slipped her arms around him and buried her head in his chest.
You know, I never imagined I would be happy again. And with all the terrible things that have happened, I know it's not right for me to be. But I am, anyway.
Drake kissed the top of her head.
So am I.
They stood there locked together for some time, before Lenora reluctantly backed away. A wistful smile then formed, and she simply said,
"Good night, Drake."
The pain in his heart was almost unbearable as she slowly closed the bedroom door. He wanted to scream out at the top of his voice. That, or to smash something into a million pieces. Most of all, he just wanted to burst into the room and ignore what his mind was telling him. He walked outside onto the porch, all the time cursing himself for being a fool. The woman he loved, who still clearly loved him in return, was not a dozen yards away from where he was standing.
"And what do you do about it?"
he muttered.
"Not a damn thing."
He stood there, staring into the night, watching the mana streams overhead as they delivered both life-saving power and life-draining sickness to the whole of Vale. He tried to think about the immediate future. They would be meeting with Exodus soon, but would they really be able to help? He doubted it. The group was likely no more able to rid Vale of the new king and the high mages than he was. If their interrogation of Salazar had yielded something that could turn the tide, surely they would have made use of it already. He had a sinking feeling that this had all been for nothing. They would continue to run until they were either caught or forced into a suicidal attempt to re-enter Troy and kill Salazar. He imagined his former friend at the coronation, the crown atop his brow bought with the blood of his father. And all the while, Xavier would be hiding in the shadows, a smug expression on his wretched face. Drake wasn't sure which one of them he despised the most. Eventually he returned inside and lay on the sofa. It was late, and tomorrow would come soon. If he were to protect Lenora, he would need to be at his best. A sharp bang startled him awake. He scrambled up, eyes searching for his P-37. Then he remembered that it was in the bedroom. Urgent voices carried in from down the hall, followed by a woman's scream.
"Lenora!"
Barely had he called her name when two men dressed in black kicked in the front door. Both carried large-caliber rifles that were pointing directly at him. These were not magistrate officers, nor were they royal guard.
"Don't move!"
barked one of the men. From where he was standing, he could see down the hallway to where Bane had been sleeping. Three men were already leading him out, weapons pressed to his head.
"On your knees!"
the man ordered. There was nothing he could do but comply. He dropped down as instructed, with arms raised. While one man kept his weapon trained, the other quickly cuffed his hands behind his back and then pulled him to his feet.
"Where is Lenora?"
he demanded.
"Do as you're told and she'll be fine."
Drake was led through the house and onto the back porch. Bane and Lenora were already there, their hands cuffed as well. A perfectly timed raid, he thought. In all, he counted a dozen men. A truck was being backed into the yard in front of Cal, and a windowless van was parked a few yards beyond. Lenora was in her nightgown, her face expressionless as she glanced over to Drake. By contrast, Bane was bright red with fury.
"Where is Max?" he shouted. "What have you done to him?"
No answer was given. They were pushed roughly from the porch and over to the van. After being bundled into the back, they were chained individually to bench seats fixed along either side, Drake and Bane to the left, and Lenora to the right. The door closed, and the vehicle instantly lurched forward. The entire operation had taken less than a minute. These guys were no amateurs. They knew what they were doing.
"Do you think Max betrayed us?"
he whispered. Bane shook his head.
"No, Max wouldn't do that."
"Are you sure?"
he pressed.
"I know he's your friend, but I said he wouldn't do that."
Drake could see that Bane was boiling over with fury. He'd expressed his admiration for the old mage on several occasions, telling them that Max had been the only professor to defend him when he'd been expelled from the college.
"Can you get free?"
he asked the other two. Both of them shook their heads.
"The cuffs have mana suppressors,"
Bane told him. He looked over to Lenora.
"Are you all right?"
She forced a smile.
"Well, I was hoping for a more cordial introduction, but I'm fine."
If this was just an introduction, Drake considered. On the positive side, if Exodus really wanted them dead, it was unlikely they would have gone through all this trouble to capture them, particularly considering the fact that they would have known all three could be highly dangerous in a fight. If he hadn't been so foolish as to leave his weapon in the other room, things might have gone very differently indeed. They rode on for hours, making a few turns from time to time. He guessed that they were headed north. Bane tried to find out how long it would be before they arrived, but the two men in the front were unwilling to speak. This only served to fuel his anger. By the time they pulled up, Drake was both sore and hungry, and he knew the other two would be feeling the same way. After several minutes, the back doors opened, and they were unshackled from the bench by a young woman wearing grey overalls. Six men stood immediately outside, all of them holding rifles.
"If you'll be patient, this will all be over soon," said the girl in a friendly voice.
"Where are you taking us?" Drake asked.
"To see Zara," she replied.
He recognized the name from the briefing in the magistrate's office. She was the purported leader of Exodus. The girl helped Lenora from the van first.
"If you will come with me," she said, "I'm sure you would all like something to eat."
Two men leaned in to pull Drake and Bane outside. They were in an empty field surrounded by thin pines on all sides. Even so, Drake could feel the ground vibrating through his boots. "Another underground facility," he told himself. This was confirmed when he heard a thin hiss, and a thick steel door rose up from within the grass. A long flight of stairs leading down ended in a series of corridors. The walls were bare and dull grey, and every door along the way was shut, though he could hear voices coming from inside the rooms as they passed. They were taken to a large chamber that, judging from the numerous tables scattered about, looked to be a dining hall.
"Just so you know," the girl said, "this entire wing is rigged to release gas into the corridors. So, please behave. No one here has any intention of hurting you."
"And what about Max?" Bane asked.
the mage from the college. He's here. Don't worry. We're not animals. We wouldn't hurt an old man, and we'll be taking him home soon. All the same, he's not too pleased with us right now. He thought it would be better if we simply asked you to come.
Why didn't you? Asked Drake.
After what you did to our refinery, I'm afraid that was a risk we weren't prepared to take. It was at that moment he noticed a slight twitch at the corner of the girl's mouth. She was hiding something.
At the time, I didn't know the truth, he explained. I was only doing what I thought I had to do.
Yes, I'm sure. The girl turned to Lenora. Once I uncuff you, I advise you not to try anything. Even were you to kill me and all the men here, the halls will be filled with gas before you can make it more than 50 yards. We did not come to fight, Lenora assured her. We need your help.
The girl's eyes darted over to Drake.
Yes, that's what we've been told.
She uncuffed each of them. Just as she was finishing, three guards entered, carrying trays and glasses filled with water. These were placed on one of the tables.
Once you've eaten, you'll be taken to where you can freshen up a bit before seeing Zara, the girl said.
She then exited along with all but two of the guards. The trio sat down, each taking a plate filled with beans and a small portion of stewed meat.
Not exactly palace food, Lenora remarked, grinning. But it will do for now.
I don't like this, remarked Bane. There's something going on here.
Drake didn't like it much either, particularly the way the girl had looked at him. However, not wanting to alarm Lenora any more than necessary, he kept this to himself.
At least we know Max is all right, he said.
I'll know that when I get to see him, Bane retorted.
Lenora picked up her spoon.
Well, given the fact that we are prisoners, I say we eat our food and make the best of it. I really don't think they would go to all this trouble just to kill us.
Agreed, Bane said.
They could have simply blown up the house or come in shooting. Or they could be getting ready to torture us for information, Drake reflected.
This was another thought he felt best kept to himself. After they finished their meal, the two guards led them out and along yet more hallways. The same girl was waiting for them in front of an open door.
Your Highness, she said, if you would step this way. I'm sure you would like a bit of privacy.
She nodded over to another door opposite.
You two can bathe and change in there.
Although loath to be separated, Drake could hardly take issue with this arrangement. Inside their room were two bunks and a metal table, while off to the right were a bathroom and a small closet. On opening this, they found their belongings had been brought.
That was considerate, said Bane,
showing the first flicker of a smile since their abduction had started. Walking around in my nightshirt and pants was becoming a bit awkward.
Too bad they didn't leave my P-37 as well, Drake responded, trying to further lighten the mood.
If what she said about the gas is true, I doubt it would do us much good.
Bane held up his finger and a tiny flame danced on the tip.
But if it comes to it, I think I will not go alone.
Drake flashed him a stern look.
Don't do anything like that unless I do it first. Understand?
The flame vanished, and Bane paused for a moment before speaking.
If they hurt Lenora...
They won't, Drake said, cutting him off.
He paused a moment before adding,
Me, on the other hand.
Yes, I saw how that girl looked at you. She's holding a grudge about something, that's for sure.
Like Drake, Bane's experience as a hawker gave him an exceptional eye for reading emotions.
Nothing to be done about it now. If she tries to kill me, I guess I'll just have to deal with it then.
They both showered and changed into their clothes. After about 3 hours of waiting, Drake was becoming restless, and he could tell that Bane was feeling the same way. Both of them sat on their cots, eyes fixed on the door. Another half hour passed. An exasperated Drake was on the verge of leaving the room to check on Lenora for himself when their door swung open. The girl entered, with Lenora walking just behind her. She had a worried look.
"What's wrong?"
Drake asked. She forced a smile.
Nothing. Terry here is taking us to see Zara now.
Drake and Bane followed her through the corridor and down another stairway. After a few more turns, he showed them to a small office. The door to this was guarded by two men. Inside, at the far end, an olive-skinned woman of about 40 was sitting behind a desk. Her black hair fell loosely about her shoulders. She was wearing a simple green cotton blouse and a set of diamond earrings. Her dark eyes bore down on them for a long moment before dismissing the girl and the guards with a brief wave of her hand. She gestured to the chairs against the wall. Drake grabbed two of these, pulling them up in front of the desk, and Bane took a third. Once all were seated, the woman looked them over one by one.
"So, you are Drake Shirazi," she said finally,
"the man who rescued Prince Salazar."
"At the time, I'm not finished," she snapped. "By rescuing him, you not only destroyed a key facility, you also killed more than 400 innocent men and women."
"What?" Drake could hardly believe she had said the words. The number didn't seem real.
"That's impossible. When you ruptured the Vex chambers, most of my people were on the second level. So, yes, it was very possible. Only a handful escaped alive."
He glanced over to Lenora, who by now was staring down at the floor, clearly already aware of this. The girl, Terry, must have told her.
"I didn't know,"
was all he could think to say.
"And if you did, what would have changed?"
I'm not sure.
Bane leapt to his defense.
"What would you have the man do? Call in the Royal Guard instead? At least Drake did what he did unintentionally. But the Royal Guard, they would have simply slaughtered every last one of you without mercy." "Ah, yes," she sneered. "Bane, outcast mage and hawker. How is it you are still alive? Is there anyone in Vale who doesn't want to see you dead? I take it you know that Fisk has put out a bounty of 50,000 notes on your head. And, to be honest, we could use the money."
"Samuel is my cousin," said Lenora. "And whatever you might think, he is a good man."
"And then there's you," said Zara. "Princess Lenora. What is it exactly you are running from? Oh, yes. Your brother wants you dead. Or at least he did. It seems that the illustrious captain, actually it's Lord Xavier now, has found a way for you to make amends. Are you aware of this yet?"
"Terry told me about it only a few minutes ago."
Drake's eyes shifted rapidly in her direction.
"Told you about what?"
Zara spoke first.
"It seems that her brother has given his permission for Xavier to wed the princess," she told him. "He claims you kidnapped her, and has offered a fortune for her safe return."
"So is that it?" said Bane. "You captured us for bounty money."
"There's no doubt it would help our cause," she replied,
leaning back in her chair.
"And it would be ironic that the very man who wants to destroy us would be funding his adversaries."
Drake noticed Bane's hands glowing faintly.
"But no, I have no intention of turning you over. You are far too valuable to us for that."
"Then what do you want from us?"
asked Lenora. She reached over and touched Bane's leg. Gradually, he released his mana.
"It is my understanding that you want to know what we learned from your brother while he was in our custody."
Rising from her chair, she crossed over to the door and dimmed the lights.
"The fact is, we learned quite a lot. We already knew about the High Mage's corruption of the mana streams, but what we learned from the prince..."
She eyed Lenora with clear suspicion.
"It makes me wonder exactly how much you know, and if you are a part of his plan as well."
"I learned of my brother's mad scheme some time ago," she admitted. "But I am not a part of it all. Quite the opposite. I hope to prevent it from happening. The old mage from the college says that you need to know how he intends to carry out his plan. Is that right?"
Lenora nodded.
"None of us have any idea how he might be able to accomplish such a seemingly impossible task. I'm sure he must have a way. But if we don't know what it is, how are we to stop him?"
Zara resumed her seat, her gaze still fixed upon the princess. There was a long pause before she spoke again.
"Tell me,
What do you know about Hellspawn?
Lenora knitted her brow.
Hellspawn? Nothing at all, really. Only that they're monsters from the outer world.
You've never heard your father or brother speak of them?
Only once or twice, when they found a way into Vale.
What does this have to do with us?
Demanded Drake. Zara's eyes shifted across to bore into him.
Absolutely everything, she replied.
Chapter 22 The holoprojector came to life, and the image of a hellspawn appeared on the wall to their left. As it moved closer, its black, soulless eyes seemed to be staring directly at them. The creature's pale green flesh was literally covered in blood, much of it likely from the horrifically mutilated corpse it was dragging along with one of its taloned claws.
"This was taken a week ago,"
Zara told them.
"It killed 12 people before the Royal Guard was able to take it down."
She looked to Drake.
"You were a Royal Guard. Did you ever find out how they were getting into Vale?"
"No," he replied. "We looked for weeks, but we were never able to find a point of entry."
"That's because you were looking in the wrong places."
Drake stiffened.
"Are you saying that you know how they got in?"
"What if I told you they didn't come from beyond the barrier at all? That they were here in Vale the whole time?"
Drake coughed a laugh.
"Then I'd say you've lost your mind."
She made no immediate reply, choosing instead to merely push the mana pad in her hand. In response, a massive steel building came up on the screen. It bore no markings, though the exterior was well maintained, and the entrance was being watched by 2 royal guards.
"Do you recognize this place?"
she asked.
"Yes, of course I do," Drake said. "It's a research facility. We kept men there around the clock, but we were never given access to the interior. Only the people who worked there were allowed beyond the door."
She regarded him for a moment.
"Were you never curious as to what they were doing?"
He spread his hands.
"It was none of my affair. The Royal Guard was charged with security, that's all. You don't question orders from the king. You just obey."
"So would it surprise you to learn that this is where the Hellspawn come from? Or at least, those that you have seen?"
Drake didn't like where this was going.
"Are you suggesting—"
"The Hellspawn are not from the outer world. They are created right here in Vale."
"That's not possible,"
Lenora blurted out.
"My father would have never allowed such a thing."
A flash of annoyance at her outburst showed on Zara's face.
"Your father, your grandfather before him, in fact every king and queen for as long as we have records of Hellspawn have known about them. Your brother knows as well. How do you think we found out?"
"I don't believe you,"
Lenora insisted, her face taut.
"Why not? The High Mages allow people to starve. The king was complicit in that. Would this be worse than the crimes they already have committed?"
"But it makes no sense," Drake said.
"What's the point?" "What is the point to anything the ruling class does?" "To maintain control, of course."
Her eyes fell on Lenora.
"If it makes you feel any better, we don't believe that it was the king who ordered these beasts to be set loose. According to your brother, it's the High Mages who do this. They use them to instill fear in the people and keep them from becoming curious."
"Curious about what?" asked Drake.
"You'll find out in due course."
Zara touched the mana pad again, this time bringing up the image of a large glass tank. Though the picture was blurry, there could be no denying that the creature inside was a hellspawn. A woman in a white coat was standing beside the tank, giving it a sense of scale. The creature wasn't anywhere near as large as the one he and Bane had fought. If anything, it was closer to the size of those he had seen in the secret room at the nightclub in Narsil.
"This picture was taken at great personal risk by one of our people," she continued. "As you can see, the hellspawn isn't yet fully grown."
Drake hesitated before telling her about his own experience.
"So, you believe her?"
asked Lenora, mortified.
"I'm not sure," he admitted. "I still don't see what this has to do with Salazar."
"We think he intends to use Hellspawn to wipe out the population."
Drake blew out a derisive breath.
That's just stupid. Say you're right. Say that Hellspawn are grown in Vale. Do you realize how many of them it would take to do the job? And even if they had enough, what good would releasing them do? These creatures wouldn't stop at the provinces. They would destroy all of Vale, even Troy.
Zara turned up the lights and then returned to her desk. Unfortunately, you came along and interfered before we could learn the entire plan.
I have to ask, Bane interjected. How are they made?
Zara's face darkened.
We don't know the process, but we do know what they are.
Her gaze fixed on Lenora.
I should say, what they used to be. They were people. Just ordinary people.
The dawning implications of this could easily be read in Lenora's expression. How could her father have known and done nothing to stop it? Within seconds, her bearing began to crumble. Bane touched her arm.
Even if it's true, it's not your fault.
Tears were spilling down her cheeks.
It's true. I just know it. This is what my brother was hiding. This is how he intends to slaughter the people.
Drake felt helpless. To learn that your entire family was guilty of murdering innocent people so as to create monsters out of them, it was unimaginable. He wanted to comfort her, but no words would salve this kind of wound. Zara's features softened.
I am sorry, Your Highness. I can see quite clearly now that you were not a part of this. But I need to know, will you help us stop it?
It was as if something inside Lenora suddenly switched off her tears. Her face became hard as steel, and her eyes narrowed.
What can I do?
A thin smile crept up from the corners of Zara's mouth.
Quite a bit. I'll explain more shortly.
Are you planning to attack this place?
Drake asked her.
I could, she replied, but it wouldn't do any good. That particular facility is much too small to house the kind of numbers Salazar would need. And if we attack now, we'll be exposing our intentions prematurely. When we strike, everything has to be in place, which means the power station has to be destroyed.
Destroy the power station?
This was the craziest thing Drake had heard yet.
You'll never get close enough, he stated. Not with 1,000 men, not even with 5,000. The magistrate's men and the royal guard, not to mention the mages, would cut you down before you made it to Lower Troy.
Zara smirked. You think so?
I know so. Have you ever seen what 5 guards armed with P-37s can do? Well, imagine 1,000 of them. Then imagine the hell the high mages would unleash. And that's always assuming you could get past the hundreds of magistrate officers.
He shook his head.
No, it's impossible.
Perhaps we could sneak in, suggested Bane.
Into the city, yes,
Drake agreed.
But you'd never make it to the power station. The Royal Guard runs drills 3 times a year trying to break in. No one has ever succeeded.
There has to be a way, Bane said stubbornly.
No, Drake is right,
Lenora told him.
Unless you're already in the palace, it's impossible. And even then, you'd need a special code. One wrong step and you'd be incinerated.
She folded her hands and closed her eyes for a second.
However, I think I might know a way around this.
She looked up at Zara.
That's what you meant by me helping you, right?
Realization struck Drake like a hammer. It was too awful a thing to even think about.
Not a chance, he shouted. I won't let you do it.
There is no other way, she said weakly.
What are you talking about? Asked Bane.
She intends to return to Troy and marry Xavier.
Bane's eyes shot wide.
Are you crazy? I'm with Drake on this one. No chance. More likely than not, he'll just kill you.
Zara began laughing softly.
You are indeed a brave woman, Your Highness. More so than I would have thought possible. And in spite of my feelings about your choice in companions, I can see that they're loyal to you. But set your mind at ease. I'm not asking you to suffer such a fate.
Lenora looked confused.
Then what do you need me to do?
Salazar isn't ready to initiate his plan just yet. We have time. Our spies tell us that he has engaged Fisk, along with a few others scattered throughout the provinces, to aid him. Though what they're getting them to do, we're still trying to find out. I could help you with that, said Bane. That was our intention, she told him.
What about me? Asked Drake.
Zara let out a long breath.
You, I'm afraid, are a difficult matter. You killed a large number of our people, and nothing I can say will change that. If you remain here, sooner or later someone will try to take revenge.
If Drake goes, I go too, Lenora said flatly.
As it happens, that's truer than you think. She rose from her seat. I need you both to come with me. I have something to show you. Then you can decide if you really do want to help us.
When Bane stood as well, she held up her hand. You should stay here. Someone will be along in a minute to go over with you in detail everything that we've learned so far.
Bane's objections to this were quickly quelled by Lenora. She took his hand.
Don't worry. We'll be fine. Stay here and gather all the information you can. That would be most useful.
With Bane seated once more, Zara led the other two out. After a few turns, they entered a large room with a number of evenly spaced round tables. Two holovid players were in the far corner, and several game boards and books were scattered about. A door was situated on the left wall, through which music could be heard drifting out. Once they were seated, Zara folded her hands on the table and regarded them both closely.
What you are about to see is known only to a very few of us. I have to ask that you do not tell your cousin about it.
I will not hide anything from him,
Lenora responded quickly.
You must, at least for now. I promise that it's nothing he needs to know.
Lenora looked to Drake, who gestured that it should be her decision. After several seconds of thought, she slowly nodded her acceptance. Zara smiled.
That's good. But before I reveal our secret, tell me what you know about the world beyond the barrier.
It's a wasteland,
Lenora replied.
Nothing grows there, and it is filled with ravenous, twisted beasts. They say it was once a garden, devastated by the War of the Ancients.
Yes, said Zara. That's what we're all told. But what if that was a lie?
I've seen beyond the barrier, Drake said. It's not.
Have you? Have you really? How far in did you go?
Drake shrugged.
Not far. Just to the other side. All new recruits of the Royal Guard are taken there so they can see for themselves what they're protecting the people from.
So you didn't venture out at all?
No. Why would I wish to? There was nothing there but black earth and dust, as far as the eye could see.
And you, Your Highness?
I've never been, but I've seen the images.
Zara nodded while digesting their answers for a moment, then called out,
Maelil, can you come in here, please?
The door to their left opened almost at once, and a tall, thin figure emerged. At first, Drake was confused as to what he was seeing. Clad in a tan cloth robe and leather shoes, the new arrival had long silver hair that fell to the middle of his back. His deep bronze skin seemed to shimmer in the mana light, while his eyes were widely spaced and tilted slightly upward, giving him a striking appearance. But it was the newcomer's ears that had Drake jumping to his feet. Long, thin, and pointed at the tip, they were clearly not those of any human.
"What the hell is that?" he demanded,
placing his body directly in front of Lenora.
"Some sort of hellspawn?"
The figure halted, eyes fixed on Drake.
"He is not a hellspawn,"
Zara insisted firmly.
"He?"
Drake repeated.
"That's a he?"
"Yes, I am most certainly male."
His voice was surprisingly deep, yet in a way light and musical.
"If, indeed, that is your question."
His accent was unlike anything Drake had heard before, with rolling R's and elongated vowels.
"This is Maelil," said Zara. "And he is how we will defeat Salazar and save the people of Vale."
Chapter 23 Maelil sat next to Zara, across from Drake and Lenora. His movements were fluid and graceful, and his emerald green eyes darted between the pair of them repeatedly.
"What? What are you?"
Lenora's voice was a mere whisper. He glanced over to Zara, who nodded her approval.
"We call ourselves Nelwyn. Beyond that description, I can tell you nothing more. We found him 2 years ago," Zara added. "Just beyond the barrier, severely injured and unconscious. He's been living here ever since."
"You are actually from beyond the barrier?" asked Lenora.
"I am."
"How is that possible?"
she pressed.
"Life outside your world is not what it seems," he explained. "There is tall land."
He paused to give an embarrassed smile.
"Forgive me, I sometimes confuse your words. There is much you do not see. The world outside is vast and green, not like here."
He looked as if he had tasted something disgusting.
"Here, the Solas tastes foul. It makes people ill." "Solas is what they call mana," Zara explained. "He can feel the taint of the high mages."
"Then why have you stayed?" asked Drake.
"Outside is dangerous for my kind. The Bomar have cut me off from my people. They hunt us down whenever they can find us. Here I am sick, but at least I am alive."
Lenora creased her brow.
"What are the Bomar?"
"Human, like you, but not like you. They cannot feel the touch of Solas in their hearts. They are fire and smoke, ash and blood. As best we can understand, Maelil's people are at war with the Bomar,"
Zara said.
"Yes," he said emphatically. "They make war on us, drive us from our homes, slaughter us for sport."
"That's terrible," said Lenora.
"But if they have no mana, can't you fight back?"
"Solas is a spirit for bringing life, not death."
"They have no aggressive magic," said Zara. "They have no concept of how to use it for defense."
"I am truly sorry about all this," Drake said, "and forgive me if I sound insensitive, but you said he could be our way of defeating Salazar. How does any of this help?"
Reaching into her pocket, Zara pulled out Drake's P-37 and pushed it across the table.
"Perhaps it's best if I show you."
She took Maelil's hand, and she said,
"He has to see for himself."
Maelil nodded.
"As you wish."
He stood up and backed away a few paces. Drake took his weapon and examined it carefully. It appeared unaltered.
"Shoot him,"
Zara instructed. Drake sat straight up.
"What? I'm not shooting him."
She grinned.
"Trust me. Just do it."
He looked to Lenora, who appeared to be just as confused and unsure.
"You cannot harm me,"
assured Maelil. After nearly a minute of consideration, Drake stepped away from the table and channeled a small amount of mana into the chamber.
"Are you sure about this?"
"Absolutely," Zara replied.
Without giving himself time to think on it any longer, Drake aimed at Maelil's leg and fired. He staggered back a pace, a hole burned into his robe. But otherwise, he seemed completely unhurt.
"That is all," he taunted. "Zara said your weapon was powerful."
Drake knew the shot would not be lethal, but it should have at least put him to the floor. He readied a more powerful shot, this time aiming it at his chest.
"You asked for it," he muttered.
The sizzle of mana cut through the air, sending Maelil sprawling onto his back. Smoke rose from where the shot struck. Both Drake and Lenora rushed to his side. Drake could only look in slack-jawed astonishment. Though, like before, the robe was burned away, there was not so much as a blemish on Maelil's flesh.
"Is that the extent of your weapon's strength?"
he groaned, clutching at the point of impact. He was hurt, but not severely.
"That shot should have killed you,"
Drake told him, still not believing his eyes.
"Are you using some sort of ward or cloak?"
"No, he is not,"
Zara said.
"His people are just highly resistant to mana. You could charge your weapon fully, and it still might not kill him.
Drake and Lenora helped Maelil to his feet.
Thank you, he said, but I am fine. There is no need for concern.
Drake gazed at his weapon, then back to Maelil, still struggling to accept what had just happened. Zara gestured for them to sit.
I think I understand, said Drake,
placing his weapon on the table in front of him.
With that kind of power, nothing could stop them. But there is only one of you, right?
In Vale, yes, Zara affirmed. But outside, there are thousands just like him.
So you intend to enlist them to our cause?
Asked Lenora.
That is my hope, and Maelil has agreed to speak to them on our behalf.
Forgive me for asking, Drake chipped in,
turning to Maelil.
But why would your people be interested in helping us?
As things are, they would not, he replied. They are being chased by our enemies. Our numbers dwindle.
So what do you plan to do?
Lenora asked Zara.
The Nelwyn have no offensive magic, she said. But that is not because they cannot wield it. They simply don't know how to. We can give them that ability. Or, more to the point, you can, Your Highness.
Me? You want me to teach them how to fight?
We are strong, said Maelil, his tone prideful. Teach us to use fire and storm. Give us what we need to save ourselves from the Boomar.
I'm not that sort of mage, she protested. I work mostly with healing magic. Bane is much better suited to this kind of thing than I am.
Zara nodded.
Yes, we are well aware of his powers. But given the fact that you are currently being hunted by Salazar and he is not, we're better for you to hide than beyond the barrier. And the task should not be a difficult one, even for a healing mage. I'm sure you were also taught how to protect yourself. All you need do is pass that knowledge on to the Nelwyn. They will develop quickly from there.
Please, said Maelil, help us, and I promise I will bring my kin to cleanse your world for you. We can save each other.
And what am I supposed to do? Asked Drake. If you think I'm staying behind,
I wouldn't send our only hope without protection, Zara told him. And being that you killed the only mage we had among us, the job is yours.
He looked to Lenora.
What do you want to do?
She drew a long breath.
If his people can stop my brother, then I see no other choice.
Her agreement produced a sigh of gratitude from Maelil.
Thank you, he said.
You do realize what this will mean, Drake said. If we succeed in destroying the power station, all mana will cease to flow. Vale will be plunged into darkness.
There is a solution to that, said Zara. One we have been working on for many years. Though, thanks to you, we've suffered quite a setback to our research.
Drake nodded.
The Vex crystals. One of your people thought I was there to steal them. I really am sorry for what happened. I hope you know that.
His apology was ignored.
We've been working on ways to stabilize them. In fact, that entire facility was run on mana from Vex crystals.
Could that be what runs the power station?
Mused Lenora, more to herself than to Zara.
It's possible. But if so, then the High Mages must have found a way of projecting the mana many times further than we can. For now, we can only build small stations capable of providing power to an area of just a few hundred square yards. It would take years for us to complete enough of those to cover all of Vale.
Drake looked at her closely.
You think you can find the knowledge you need in Troy, don't you?
That is our hope, yes.
He furrowed his brow.
And if you don't?
Then Vale will be no worse off than it is now. And at least the land will be able to heal. What would be better? Spending a few years in the dark, but with enough food for everyone? Or letting the people die?
She set her jaw, her eyes burning with resolve.
No. This farce must end. It may take time, but we will make things better. For all of us.
The thought of Troy being cast into darkness disturbed Drake greatly. The city had been a beacon of hope to him his entire life. And though he now knew that everything it stood for was one massive lie, he still could not help the way he felt.
"When would you want us to leave?" asked Lenora.
"Right away," Zara told her. "Every moment we wait, Salazar is moving closer to his objective."
"And what about Samuel?"
"He has to make his own choice. We won't force him to help us."
"Of course he'll want to help you," thought Drake.
How could anyone not want to after discovering what Salazar intended?
"I'm sure he'll make the right decision," said Lenora.
"I hope you're right." She touched Maliel's hand.
"You should get rested. It's almost time."
Maliel rose and said farewell, then returned to his room. His expression was difficult to read. It was so very different, inhuman. But Drake thought he noticed a sign of relief in his peculiarly shaped eyes. Zara led them back to the chambers where they had bathed and changed, telling them that they would be departing just before dawn. Until then, two men would be placed outside the door to keep any vengeance-minded people away from Drake. He was still reeling over the number of people who had perished during Salazar's rescue. But he had to put that out of his mind for now. Protecting Lenora must be his only focus. Something the Nelwyn had said was troubling him. He'd described the Bomar as human. If that were so, was it even right for them to be doing this? Then again, how did he know Maliel was telling the truth about anything?
"You don't," he muttered while lying down on his bunk. "And it doesn't matter."
What mattered was defeating Salazar. If there was a possibility that the Nelwyn might be willing to help, they had to try. Lenora seemed to believe what Maliel had said. As for himself, he would just have to trust her instincts. Chapter 24 Salazar threw open the door to his bedchamber. He could still feel the weight of the ceremonial crown on his brow and the loathsome touch of the Grand Mage on his cheeks. Her voice continued to ring in his head, calling out the words of ascension for the assembled nobles and high mages to hear. He could still see the smirks on some of their faces, as well as the looks of suspicion. They knew, or they suspected, what he had done. As fast as he could, he stripped off the cumbersome clothes he'd been compelled to wear and flung them into the corner. He needed to wash off the stink of the day.
"You are king now."
The voice was kindly and filled with pride, so unlike his father's. "I know," he responded, "but they think I'm a pretender. They don't respect me."
"What does it matter? You are king, and soon you shall be the savior of Vale. Let them laugh and scheme. In time they will beg you for forgiveness."
He crossed over to his desk and retrieved the crystal from a drawer. It felt warm to the touch, soothing.
"But I'm not ready. The Hellspawn are still growing. What if we are discovered?"
"By whom? No one can stop us. You are strong and wise. You will shepherd the people into a new age, one of plenty and prosperity."
He pressed the crystal to his breast.
"Thank you. Where all others are against me, you are my only ally."
Salazar could feel its power seeping into him. Each day he became stronger and more powerful. But this crystal was nearly spent. He needed more if his true ambition was to be realized. And when the high mages finally understood, he would laugh at the fools while crushing them to dust.
"Then you will be loved by all."
Placing the crystal back inside the desk, he made his way to the shower. Though it was still early, as the hot water washed away the invisible layer of filth he imagined the day had laid upon him, he felt fatigue setting in. All business could wait. He would sleep first. While donning his silk nightshirt, he noticed the painting of his father hanging on the wall near a tall bookcase. The eyes were staring at him accusingly, as if watching his every move. Salazar stood in front of it for a time, lips curled into a snarl.
"This is all your fault," he growled. "You knew what they were doing. You let me believe that you were helpless to change things.
But that was a lie, wasn't it?
He waited, as if expecting the image to respond. Unwanted memories flooded in. Memories of his father walking with him in their garden, telling him stories of the ancients, teaching him magic, holding him in his arms when he was afraid, wakened by nightmares.
No!
He shouted.
You won't trick me! You won't make me weak like you!
A knock at the door snapped him into the moment. Grabbing hold of the painting, he jerked it from the wall and quickly shoved it underneath his bed. Only then did he push the mana pad on his nightstand. The door clacked open to reveal a royal guard still dressed in his full ceremonial uniform. The guard bowed low.
"Forgive the intrusion, Your Majesty. There is a young girl here to see you. She bears your seal."
Salazar realized that he was perspiring. He dabbed his brow with his sleeve and smoothed down his shirt.
"Yes, of course. Show her in."
The guard bowed again and then ushered a young girl inside. She was wearing the blue and white uniform of the university. Her hair was tied into a topknot, kept in place by two white pins, and she was holding a leather book in one hand. Salazar smiled broadly.
"Lynx, I am so happy to see you."
She did not smile in return.
"I did what you asked, Your Majesty."
He felt an overwhelming sense of relief.
"I knew I could count on you."
He gestured over to a small table near a window overlooking a private garden.
"Please, sit."
Lynx hesitated for a second before complying.
"How long have you known?"
she asked, sliding the book across the table. Salazar cocked his head.
"Known what, my dear?"
"About the power station. About the High Mages."
"That all depends."
Salazar's eyes drifted to the book.
"What is it you know?"
"I know a Vex crystal when I see one," she replied coldly.
"That's what really powers Vale, not the High Mages."
Salazar took the book and opened it cautiously. Nestling inside a small recess was what he had been yearning for. His desire to touch it was unbearable. What Lynx had said only seconds before faded from memory.
"Your Majesty?"
He blinked hard and closed the book.
"Yes, the High Mages. Well, Lynx, things aren't quite as simple as you might think. While it is true that the Vex crystals provide the mana, it's the High Mages who know how to stabilize the crystals. They're the only ones who know how the station works, for now."
He could see that there was more than just the power station troubling her. He had taken a great risk in sending her there during the coronation, but she was the only person he could trust to complete the task. A thought then occurred.
"You didn't touch the crystal, did you?"
"No." He breathed a sigh of relief.
"That's good. It would be very dangerous for someone like you, with no magical abilities."
He regarded her for a long moment.
"You have something to say?"
"Yes, I do."
She met Salazar's gaze.
"Is it true what they're saying about Drake?"
Salazar leaned back in his chair and lowered his eyes.
"Can I trust you, Lynx? I mean, really trust you."
"You know you can,"
she answered.
"I broke into the power station for you, didn't I?"
"Yes, you did. And you have no idea how grateful I am. However, there are things happening that you could not possibly fathom. And I need people I can trust by my side."
"That doesn't answer my question."
"No, it doesn't," he agreed. "Are you sure you want to know the answer?"
"If you're asking me if I would still be loyal to you if I discovered that Drake is innocent, then the answer is yes. Look, my life before was nothing but stealing, running, and trying not to starve to death. Much as I like Drake, it was you who brought me here to Troy. It is you I owe the most to. So you can trust me or not, tell me or not. It won't change a thing."
Salazar smiled.
"You are a unique individual, Lynx. I feel fortunate to know you. Of all those around me, I trust you the most. For that reason, I am going to share something with you, something only a handful of people know. But you must understand, once you have been told, there can be no turning back. Your fate will inescapably be bound to mine. So I will ask you one more time. Do you want to know the answers? All of them?
Lynx's expression hardened. It was clear that she would not be dissuaded. After a long moment of stone silence, she nodded.
Tell me.
Chapter 25. It took 3 days to reach the point in the barrier where they could cross over, during which time Drake's apprehension continued to build. Maelil had gone over with them a rough estimate of the path they would need to take, but as it had been 2 years, he was not entirely sure of his accuracy. The way the Nelwyn had described the outer world was wholly unbelievable to Drake. He could still see ruined land as clearly as the day he'd stepped onto its barren soil, with not so much as a dried twig lying upon the ground, still smell the odor of ash, still feel the complete lack of any moisture in the air. Bane had nearly become violent when first being told that they were to be separated. This was exacerbated by the fact he was not allowed to know where they would be going or what their mission was. It took Lenora more than an hour of talking to him before he calmed down. In the end, he reluctantly accepted the situation and vowed to be ready to strike by the time they returned. Maelil told them of how his people had first met the Bomar. "They claimed to come to us in peace," he began. "They said they only wanted to trade with us, machines in exchange for food, cloth, jewelry, and other things we make. Our artisans are quite skilled, and our fields are rich with bounty. Though we had very little use for what they offered, we could see their need. They were starving. Without solas, their fields withered. The only thing they had was their industry, and even this had polluted their rivers and lakes. At first they appeared grateful and eager to be friends. Then the winter came. We did our best to help them, but their need was far greater than our resources could bear. When we could give no more, they simply took what they wanted instead. When we protested, that was when the killing began. Since then they have spread like a disease, driving us farther and farther from our homes. Now we have almost nowhere else to retreat. Our backs are pressed against the mountains, and now it is we who are dying of hunger and thirst." Maelil was almost in tears by the end. Lenora placed a hand on his shoulder.
"We will do what we can."
He smiled weakly.
"With your help, I am sure we'll have victory. You are not like them. The soul of the world is within you, as it is with my people. Even your machines use its essence for strength. I am sure it was the Mother who sent me to you. I had wondered why, but looking at you, I think I understand."
"The Mother?"
asked Drake.
"The Creator and Keeper of all things. She was here in the beginning. She molded my people from the earth and breathed into us the spirit of life. I do not think your people hold such beliefs."
Drake nodded. It was said that the people of Vale had once worshipped a creator, but that was long ago.
"And the Bomar?" he asked. "What do they believe in?"
"Who knows? What god could create such people and deserve worship?"
"So you don't think your mother made them?"
"I have asked myself that many times," he admitted, "and have yet to come to an answer. Some of us think they must be descendants of the Amarisians, those who came before."
Drake gave him a lopsided frown. "Before what? Creation?"
"Of this world, yes. We believe the world has been destroyed and created many times. There is proof of this in the mountains and in the icy lands beyond. I have seen with my own eyes the remains of the old world."
"The ancients," thought Drake. Maybe the stories were true after all, or at least some of them.
On arriving at the barrier, he could see that Lenora was genuinely frightened, though she was doing her best to hide it. They had packed only a few days' worth of food and water, but Maelil assured them they would not be needing more. The man who had driven them to this point called Drake to the back of the van and handed him a long item wrapped in a cloth. Inside was his sword.
"Zara said to make sure you had this," he told him. "She said you might need it." The other two were busy slinging their packs as Drake drew it from its sheath. Maelil immediately took notice. "A fine weapon," he remarked.